Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
It's the middle of the week. It's a Wednesday. It's November 20th. Hope you're having a beautiful day today and some very exciting news out of Rome. You may have seen the story already on Catholic News Agency and our other outlets, and Joan Lewis will give us a complete update. It's breaking news out of the Vatican and, of course, from the papal audience today that we will see the canonization in the spring during the Jubilee year and also in the summer of the canonization of Carlo Acutis, who is buried in Assisi, and Blessed Pier Giorgio Fossati, who right now is buried in Torino at San Giovanni Battista, St. John the Baptist Basilica in Turin. So this is very exciting news. And Carlo Acutis, of course, his body is at St. Mary Major in Assisi. And very exciting. And just to remind you that we are taking a beautiful marriage pilgrimage next year. Deacon Domini, the Alexanders from the Alexander House, and recently announced and confirming Father Frankie Cicero as our spiritual director. And we will be visiting the tomb of Carlo Acutis, and it will be then, God willing, in October, St. Carlo Acutis. So Joan will be up a little bit later on in the program to talk about that. And speaking of the Jubilee year and exciting news, you may have seen the beautiful article by my friend and fellow Catholic journalist and author, Paul Batty, Montepello's Holy Veil, Light of Faith for a New Jubilee. It was a beautiful commentary written by Paul Batty, who's actually written books about the Veil of Montepello, which is amazing. You can go see it. It's in Abruzzo, not too far from Rome. And he's commenting on a new investigation done by a well-known and much-respected physician from his home country of Germany. So some neat stories this morning to discuss, and I do hope you can stay tuned for the entire 2 hours. If you're interested in joining us on that pilgrimage, by the way, you can go to my website at teresatomeo.com. and go to the event section. But this is very, very exciting news. I mean, we're going to be celebrating marriage with the Saints of Umbria next October, as I mentioned, with the Alexanders and Deacon Domini. And we had Father Frankie with us for our most recent pilgrimage from the East and West Coast, Italy, coast to coast, and the pilgrims just loved him. He's out of the Diocese of Phoenix, very dynamic young priest, an incredible story of suffering and pain and addiction, and how God took all that and eventually turns this amazing priest, this amazing faithful young man, into an incredible priest and homilist. So he's going to be joining us again. It'll be our second pilgrimage that we're doing with Father Frankie Cicero, God willing, in October. But teresatomeo.com, the event section, and you'll see the flyer, and you can find out more information by contacting our friends at Corporate Travel Service in southeastern Michigan. Alrighty then, we've got some really strong weather on both sides of the country. First, we have a strong, long-duration atmospheric river bringing excessive rainfall, flash flooding, and very strong winds to southwest Oregon and northwest California. And that's going to be with us, they say, through tomorrow. They say excessive rainfall has been issued, a storm there, storm warnings, a high risk level, and a storm system over the northern plains as well will produce locally heavy snow in North Dakota and northwestern Minnesota. And then good news about the rain on the East Coast is that that part of the country, specifically the New York area, will be getting some very badly needed rain. Right now, though, it is a Wednesday morning, and you're listening to Catholic Connection. It's a co-production, of course, of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN. And we do need to get to the news because, as you can imagine, there's a lot of it with the news coming out of Rome. This program and this newscast brought to you by our friends at House of Joppa, the website, houseofjoppa.com. Let's get started. Well, big news, and Joan will have more about this. Pope Francis announcing today that Blessed Carlo Acutis and Blessed Pier Giorgio Fossati, two young Catholics much loved for their vibrant faith and witness to holiness, will be canonized during two major Jubilee year celebrations dedicated to young people. Catholic News Agency telling us that surprise announcement came at the conclusion of the Holy Father's weekly audience today in St. Peter's Square, celebrating World Children's Day. Vatican spokesperson Matteo Brunet later confirming that Carlo Acutis' canonization occurring during the Church's Jubilee of Teens, taking place April 25th through the 27th, and Pier Giorgio Fossati's canonization will take place during the Jubilee of Youth from July 28th to August 3rd. Both soon-to-be saints are beloved by many Catholic young people for their enthusiastic pursuit of holiness. And again, the two canonizations are expected to bring many young people to the Eternal City in 2025 for the Catholic Church's Jubilee of Hope. And more on this in our Two Cents segment. Meanwhile, prominent buildings in several cities across Italy and around the world turning red today to mark Red Wednesday. At the Vatican, as Lisa Zangrini explains, it's part of the Aid to the Church in Need's annual campaign for persecuted Christians.
Some 300 events will be taking place in more than 20 countries throughout the week marking Red Wednesday, including masses, talks, live streams, concerts, and parliamentary discussions. Britain, Ireland, the US, Canada, Australia, but also France, Italy, and Germany are among them. Ireland plans to light 26 of its cathedrals. In France, the event will include testimonies from those who have endured persecution, while ACN Germany plans to host a concert that will be live-streamed. In Britain, Cardinal Vincent Nicholls of Westminster has endorsed the campaign in a video message inviting parishes and individuals to participate in activities to raise awareness and pray for suffering Christians. In London, where a special Mass will be taking place on Wednesday evening, famous buildings such as the Westminster Parliament will be lighted up, and the faithful across the country are encouraged to wear red, symbolising the blood of the martyrs. In the run-up to the day, ACN UK has also asked people to sign an open letter calling on the British Foreign Secretary to channel more taxpayer-funded overseas development aid to support Christians and other religious minorities. Also joining this year for the first time is the Church of England, which has provided a range of resources that individuals, parishes and organisations can use to support the cause of persecuted Christians. According to ACN's latest biennial report, Christian persecution has significantly worsened between 2022 and 2024. The report highlights the displacement of Christians, forced marriage of women and girls, and anti-conversion laws, and for the first time includes Nicaragua, due to the increased targeting and expulsion of clergy by the Sandinista regime. I am Lisa Zangarini.
In California, a girls' high school volleyball team getting support after forfeiting a game involving a transgender player. A number of pastors in the area have reached out to Stone Ridge Christian High School in backing that decision.
The people of the state of California are waking up to some of these policies that we have.
Pastor Rick Countryman at the Big Valley Grace Community Church says he's spoken with the school's leaders and thanked them for their stance. He says allowing a transgender player creates an unsafe environment. In a statement, the California Interscholastic Federation says all students should have the opportunity to take part on a team that is consistent with their gender identity. After hours of testimony, the Texas State Board of Education narrowly approving to allow Bible teachings in elementary schools. The curriculum designed by the state public education agency would include teachings on subjects such as the Golden Rule and lessons from books such as Genesis and the Old Testament. Under the current plan, schools would not be required to teach the lessons, but they would be in line for additional funding if they did so. Yesterday's vote to approve that curriculum was 8-7 in favor. A final vote is set for Friday. And Tammy Trujillo tells us more than 30 state attorneys general are joining a national effort to increase federal online protections for children.
The bipartisan coalition is urging Congress to pass the Kids Online Safety Act before the end of the year. The group says lawmakers need to address the growing crisis of youth mental health linked to social media use. A letter was recently sent to Congress to highlight several ways to enhance online safety, including providing parents with tools to identify harmful behavior and requiring platforms to enable their own protections. The latest move comes as many states have already launched investigations into popular social media companies.
There is ongoing discussion inside the Republican Party about how the mass deportation of illegal immigrants will play out. Some, such as Congressman Tony Gonzalez of Texas, wanted to focus on those who commit crimes.
We need to focus, I'm talking about the convicted criminal aliens that keeps all Americans safe.
But there is pushback from some of the Republican Party. Fellow Texas Congressman Chip Roy wants every illegal immigrant deported. He said this week that Republicans need to back Donald Trump, who was vowing mass deportations as soon as he enters the White House in January. Donald Trump is nominating TV's Dr. Oz to lead the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. CMS oversees Medicare, Medicaid, the Children's Health Insurance Program, and healthcare.gov, which currently provide coverage to nearly 50% of Americans. Trump said Oz has been at the forefront of healthy living for years and will work alongside Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who has been nominated to lead the Department of Health and Human Services under the Trump administration. And at least one person is dead and hundreds of thousands are without power as a powerful bomb cyclone brings heavy rain and winds to the Pacific Northwest. In Seattle last night, for example, this man was nearby when gusty conditions caused a tree to topple onto a local metro bus.
Since it's dark, we couldn't really see much, but we heard the boom. We ran over from the street corner up to the bus driver, who was really shaken, and he was going to know how lucky he was.
The bus driver was unhurt and there were no passengers on board, but north of Seattle, a woman was killed when a tree fell on a homeless encampment. The National Weather Service reporting wind gusts of more than 100 miles an hour also off the coast of British Columbia. That's 70 miles an hour in Washington and 50 miles an hour in western Oregon. And more than 700,000 customers are without power in Washington as of early this morning. Over on the East Coast, Natalie Migliori tells us much-needed heavy rain is expected to move through New York and New Jersey as drought conditions persist there.
Most of the tri-state region, including New York City, will see rain following an exceptionally dry fall season. However, higher elevations north and west of the city could be expecting their first snowfall of the season. With much of the region under a drought warning and residents told to conserve water, this area has not seen drought conditions this bad in 22 years. This week's rain will not fully erase the rainfall deficit, but it's expected to relieve some of the strain.
Frontier Airlines is adding 16 new routes starting next year. The budget carrier will be expanding across the U.S. and Caribbean at the same time competitor Spirit Airlines is filing for bankruptcy. The new routes will be added in February and March across 21 airports. Monica Nelson tells us United States Postal Service may cost you a little bit more in 2025.
USPS is raising its prices on priority mail and ground advantage packages starting early next year. The United States Postal Service says the price will be going up around 4%. The good news is the price of stamps will stay the same. They do offer a plethora of holiday stamps, including snow globes, Christmas Madonna, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, along with the classic American flag. But in January, they're issuing a new stamp featuring Betty White.
Macy's crews are doing the final touches to the floats that will be in this year's Thanksgiving Day parade in New York City. There are 34 floats that will make their way down the 2.5-mile parade route, including a handful of new ones this year. They include a Magic Meets the Seas float, which has unique details from 8 Disney Cruise Line ships, and Dora's Fantastical Rainforest is returning for the first time in 15 years. The Wondrous World of Wildlife celebrates the iconic Bronze Zoo. So there you go, a couple of cool things in the parade to look forward to. Comcast will be spinning off its cable networks. The media giant expected to announce today it's separating from CNBC, MSNBC, and other Comcast networks. The new entity reportedly will be led by current chair of NBC Universal's media group. The spinoff is expected to take about a year. Comcast shares were up, by the way, more than 2% in after-hours trading following the news. And when it comes to happiness, Lucinda Kay tells us, experts are reminding us there are some healthy habits, and they give us 5 to embrace to help us become more consistent with our joy.
A psychologist at UC Riverside says, find activities you can become fully absorbed in. It's called a flow state, and it brings you joy, like music, yoga, art, volunteering. Practice random acts of kindness. They can make you feel generous and capable. And choose gratitude. Celebrate your wins and cheer on other people's accomplishments, too. And the big one, nurture your relationships. Research shows relationships are more important than money, your job, and even your health when it comes to the pursuit of happiness.
So I would definitely agree with several of those points, especially gratitude and attitude of gratitude. Extremely important. We know that as Christians. Blessed Solanus Casey, who spent the last few years of his ministry in the Archdiocese of Detroit, always said that gratitude is the first sign of a rational thinking human being. It really makes a difference in your life and your whole outlook, and also nurturing your relationships and taking care of people, right, and reaching out to people, yes. But what about joy as an acronym? Jesus first, others second, yourself last. Somehow the experts, even though they did have some good suggestions, missed that point. But that's why we exist, to help you make sure that you put Jesus and the one holy Catholic and apostolic faith at the center of your life. And to help you do that, we have all kinds of interesting stories and developments, including a cool story from my friend Paul Batty. You may have seen his commentary in the Register this week, all about the Holy Vale of Montepello and some exciting things for the Jubilee year. Paul joins us up next on a Wednesday. Stay tuned.
Ave Maria Radio's Good News Cruise is more popular than ever. Every year, couples testify how their marriages are revitalized and transformed. The 2026 cruise is already three-quarters full, so if you want to join, now is the time. Special guests include musicians Andrea Bocelli, Matt Maher, Sarah Kroger, and John Ignatie, as well as hosts from Ave Maria Radio. Fun, romance, devotion. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Travel tab to find out more.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
The devil will always do his best to tempt you into sin until you get to that place where you love sin. That's what he wants. He wants you down there with him. And not because he loves you, he hates you. When you do what the enemy tempts you to do, he does it out of pure hatred.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Minutes past the hour, Catholic Connection coast to coast and around the globe on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. And the amazing author, speaker, and Catholic journalist, my friend Paul Batty, is known to many of our listeners and viewers. He's been on EWTN many times, and his work has been featured, of course, in the National Catholic Register and other outlets. And recently, speaking of the National Catholic Register, Paul penned a beautiful piece, and it reads, Montepello's Holy Vale, Light of Faith for a New Jubilee. Paul, my friend, great to hear your voice. Good morning.
Good morning, Teresa. What a pleasure hearing you.
Yes, from Roma. So tell us about, first of all, what you hope to see with the Vale of Montepello, with the Holy Face, what you're hoping that Christians will discover if they haven't discovered it already for the Jubilee year 2025.
All right. You know, you're familiar with the fact that this Vale of Montepello used to be the Sudarium, which was first mentioned by St. John, the evangelist. And he said about the resurrection. He came to the grave, John and Peter came to the grave, they found a little cloth that lay in there and the big shroud, you find it green. So there are two cloths in the grave. And one shows, you know, the big cloth and the shroud and tree shows the dead body. And the other one, the cloth which has been put on the face of the Lord. His open eyes is alive. And it's beautiful. It's just endlessly beautiful.
How did it end up, for our listeners who may not have been to Montepello in Italy, how did it end up there? Yeah. Can you give us a little bit of the story?
Yes. Well, you know, it used to be the most sacred treasure of the popes in the Vatican, in St. Peter. And then you had an enormous catastrophe in 1527. It was the sack of Rome. And German soldiers they seized Rome and they took everything here. They ruined Rome. And that during that episode, you know, they wanted to grab the Pope and the claimants and to get that veil. Did succeed in neither of the cases. So, and that turmoil, this veil has been brought, the Pope has been brought to the St. Angel's in, you know, the Hadrian Palace, the, you know, the, what is it called in English? The Engelsburg. because of the angels, and the, that way kept on ways we don't really know in Montebello. The far as easy you can get in Italy from Rome.
And now, my understanding is... go ahead, finish. Yeah, go ahead.
And since that time, it is forgotten. You know, the Vatican never admitted it in those days. Never admitted it. But it is, in fact, they substituted it by how should I say, hoax, by another thing. They show it every year. Yeah. Maybe that is the true icon. Just not. The true icon is still in Rome, in Montebello.
Let's talk a little bit.
It came... Yes.
Let me ask you a question. Sorry about that. I think we have a little bit of a delay because of the international connection. But what I wanted to ask you about is in terms of the Jubilee year, because there was a doctor recently, as you mentioned in the article, there was a doctor from Germany, very renowned, very respected, that apparently has now examined the Vale of Montebello. What did he discover about it?
Well, first of all, you know, they are Germans. You know, the Germans, they conquered Rome and the sack of Rome, so they caused all the turmoil, caused all the confusion, but then Germans came back to identify the Vale of Montebello. The biggest, most notable German was Pope Benedict XVI, who came to Montebello after 400 years, the first pope, September 1st in 2006, and prayed there. But now this Dr. Wade, he, of course, he followed these events, and he's fascinated by the veil. He'd never been there. He'd never seen the veil. He heard about it, and he says he has to examine it. And that's what he did. And so the essence of this new discovery on the veil, the Holy Face, goes like this. Unlike sun rays, many other rays are colorless and lightless, full of energy, like X-rays, infrared light, or alpha, beta, and gamma rays. Beta rays are produced during radioactive decay after nuclear fission. And this Dr. Wade from Kissing came some weeks ago. He measured such high beta rays and high doses on the Vale of Montebello, on the Holy Face of Montebello. Also within the entire Basilica. It should be the case since it's plated by the roof. So this means three things. Firstly, the Holy Face is not only a destination for many pilgrims, but also a source of physical energy. It can be measured. The source of physical energy which can be measured. So it's a joke. It's not merely an assumption. It's the physical effect. And secondly, the Holy Face must have been created many centuries ago during nuclear fission. And then third, the true image of Christ in the veil is not the result of a plain replication of nuclear exchange in the fibers of the carrier material. That is more or less it is. You know, now we have objective measurements. You know, there are many who wrote, and I wrote a couple of books about it. This is slightly different. You know, this is a physical thing. It's not a chemical, it's a physical, it's a fact. Now we can you can measure it. You couldn't measure my books, you couldn't measure what I wrote about.
But now you have this doctor, as you mentioned, Vaith is, in your article, a 78-year-old physician with a doctorate in chemistry, a senior physician and head of the hormone laboratory at the University of Würzburg. He has been awarded the German Inventor Prize as a holder of several patents and has been a speaker at several world congresses on geriatrics and gerontology. Today, he's involved in research into new use for hydrogen and continues to practice medicine in Germany. With the approach of the Holy Year, he visited the Papal Basilica of the Holy Face in Montebello in September 26, to perform his own examination using nuclear medicine equipment. The shrine's rector, Capuchin Father Antonio Gentili, opened the armored glass door of the display case where the sudarium has been sealed in its reliquary since 1714. And he examined the sudarium, the doctor, for 2 hours on the first day of his visit and another hours 2 days later. He said, as a doctor, I can see this person must have been severely tortured. That was his initial assessment, you said, and that what's visible, neither traces of color nor traces of blood can be detected on the image. Other bodily fluids, such as blood or sweat, are not recognizable. This cloth can therefore only have been applied to a person who has already died. So this is also... quite fascinating. So what was the moment? I think we'll pick it up after the break. But when we come back, if you could talk about the moment that image on the veil was captured. Because when you look at it, and I've seen it, you've taken us there, you've been with me and Steve Ray on different groups going to Montebello. To me, it always looks like it is right after the resurrection and the Lord opens his eyes as he's waking up. And it is just so powerful and so beautiful to see. And what's really, really neat, if you've never been to Montebello, is it really kind of is in the middle, I guess you can say that, in the middle of nowhere in Abruzzo, which is a beautiful area, which is really mainly national parks. Abruzzo is east of Rome or east of Lazio, and then it goes all the way over to the Adriatic, and there's mountains and national parks, and it's quite beautiful. And so to go to this beautiful place in Montepello and to have time to sit there in front of the veil is quite remarkable. Anyway, let me tell you about the headline again. You can look it up on the Register. We'll also put a link to it on our archive section. Montepello's Holy Veil, Light of Faith for a New Jubilee. We're talking about that with our guest, Paul Batty. He's an author and a speaker. And within this article, as we mentioned, there is a physician's study of the sedarium that we just mentioned and a little bit more detail. More with Paul Batty when we come back on a Wednesday morning. Don't forget, check it out on the Register. Montepello's Holy Veil, Light of Faith for a New Jubilee.
On 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The second commandment, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. The disclosure of a name in the ancient world belonged to the order of trust and intimacy, and so when God revealed his name to Moses, it was an extraordinary outreach to us, saying that we were called to an intimate, trusting relationship with him. And so we should always reverence this name as a great gift. We should obviously never use God's name to curse or to blaspheme or to berate others. God's name is meant to bring blessing. And likewise, the vain use. Vain means empty. So some of these expressions like, oh my God, or, you know, and so on, need to be avoided as well. Vain means empty, and those are using God's name as an empty kind of expression of exasperation. And then finally, never ever to use God's name to swear an oath falsely. God is the God of truth. The second commandment, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain.
For more about the Ten Commandments, visit EWTNRC.com.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
We'd all love to do more to serve others, but where do you find the time? Well, it's easy if you remember that Christian service begins at home. Remind your family that everything God's given you is meant to be passed on to other brothers and sisters in the Lord when you're done. Encourage your family to take good care of the clothes, toys, furniture, and other blessings you've been given so that others can delight in them when it's their turn. Then, once per season, as a family, gather the gently used clothes, toys, and other goods you've finished enjoying and bring them to your parish or other community center that can donate them to other families who are waiting to be blessed as you have been. To discover more ways your family can celebrate the liturgy of domestic church life, check out the newest editions of Parenting with Grace and visit CatholicCounselors.com. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
If you are planning a trip to Italy for the Jubilee year next year to walk through the Holy Doors, you might want to go to Montepello in Abruzzo, the Abruzzo region, for the Holy Veil, of which we're speaking with Paul Batty, Catholic journalist, author, and speaker. And as we mentioned, or unless you're just tuning in, he did pen a beautiful piece for the National Catholic Register this week, a commentary, Montepello's Holy Veil, Light of Faith for a New Jubilee. And you could look up Montepello online. You could look up the article. And if you're not familiar with the image, it's quite something. And it also, they will tell you when you go there, and Paul has this all in his books on the Holy Veil, that it matches up in terms of the image with the shroud as well. Paul, let's talk about what we are looking at when we look at the veil. What is the moment that image, through radiation, that you and the other researchers believe, what's the moment that was captured? Tell us about that.
There's a reason. There's no alternative. There's only one moment. It's the moment of the resurrection. If you do have now, we see it now there, and we do have, the church has, we do have the face of the human face of God. The human face, that's how Pope Benedict always called it. It's the human face of God. He became one of ours. And then we can see. It is, look at him, it's like looking into the eternity. It is. There's no, it's incomparable, as you know.
How did you find out about it? Take us back to the day when you became curious and started researching and writing about the Veil of Montepello.
Oh, that's a long story. You know, I've written 3 books about it, or even more. Now, I came in Turin. I heard first about it. In Turin, I met a German professor. He said, there's another face, another veil, another cloth you have to see. It was Professor Pfeiffer. He was studying. He was art historian here in Rome at the Gregorian University. He said, you got to see this. That's how it started. It starts in Turin. Torino. At the shrine.
And do you think, because we have the Jubilee year, what are the crowds going to be like, do you think, in terms of, because it's been kind of hidden. There have been groups that have gone there, and you mentioned Benedict XVI visited there as well to venerate the veil. Is it becoming more popular with groups? Are more groups going there? And do you expect that to continue, Paul, in the Jubilee year?
I guess so, Teresa. I guess so. And first of all, I mean, there are many poets are coming. Poets, they are the pilgrim nation. They're coming. They keep coming. And then they come. Americans are coming. They come from all over the world. Now Koreans are coming. They come. All it has been hidden for more than 400 years. Now it's only 20 years ago that it came out and made it public that this is a real event. And then 20 years is not much, but what happened in these 20 years is enormously. The development is enormously what happened. But don't forget. Keep in mind, it has been hidden for 400 years, and now. But now it's coming back. And it's getting to the conscience of the entire world, the Catholic world. They're coming from everywhere, every day.
Why do you think this is so important right now, what's going on in our world in terms of all the division and all the upheaval?
Because we have lost, you're right. We've lost personal context. We have lost faith that really God became man, you know. You know, like the next year we have the Jubilee of Nicaea Council. It was declared that God became man, and he is man, and he is God. Jesus was God. But nobody believed it then. Then it was in those days, with Arianism, we said, no, he was a good man, but he was not God. But here we see it's him. You know, it's a miracle, it's an inexplicable miracle. Here, this comes back to prove it's me, and I'm God. I'm man, I'm God. It's like the late answer to the Council of Nicaea, yes.
Yes. And I also think, too, that our Lord gives us these different images and says, come and see. Of course, we have the shroud. And so far, as we know with the shroud, it's not going to be exposed for veneration next year during the Jubilee year. But we do have Montepello, which people can easily visit, especially if they're going to Rome.
Every day.
Now, the doctor you quote in this beautiful piece that you wrote, Paul. We're talking with Paul Batty, Catholic journalist and author. You mentioned the studies that he's done. Is he going to, do you think, was he intrigued? Will Dr. Vaith come back and do more research? Or where is he now in terms of his opinion on the veil?
He certainly will, Teresa. He certainly will. And he will also going to come to Turin, to test Turin too. The Shroud of Turin. But he's going to come back.
Will he be given access to the shroud?
Yes, I hope so. I hope so. We have to try it because there's some, how should I say, there's some invidia, there's some jealousy in Turin against the Montepello veil, but it will pass. It will pass away in some time. You know,
I want to read some.
Much love, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to read some more comments from your article. At the end of the investigation, the doctor wrote, all in all, there was only one explanation for the formation of the image of the sacred face. The atomic change from nitrogen must have occurred under the influence of an enormous neutron radiation or light energy. The image is therefore not due to the application of paint, but to the nuclear altered fibers of the carrier material. Wow. So this is very similar, though, Paul, as you know, with all your research, what the experts say has happened with the shroud because of the radiation. That was the only way the image could have been placed upon the cloth, right?
The same nuclear fission, yeah. That's what they always said, but here we can see. Now it's the first time that this is measured. It can be measured even much more deeper, yeah.
How are you in terms of doing with promoting this? Because I know this is always a passion of yours to get more people to go to Montepello. How is that going?
Yeah. It's all right. I mean, it's improving, as you would say. It's improving.
And what would you tell people? On Luke. I know I wanted to talk to you about the icon of Luke, but what would you tell people who may be having a plan next year to go to Rome for the Jubilee year? Because Montepello is not that far from Rome. It's only about 2 hours, so it's easy to get to.
2 hours, yeah.
What would you tell them about going to Montepello to see the veil?
To take a car is the best way to get there.
But I mean, in terms of why they should go, why should they go?
As I said, we do have the church. We do have the image of God, which is incredible. That, I mean, no other religion can claim this. No, not the Muslim, not the Jew, nobody else can say, we know how God looks like. You know, but we know it. We always said so. We always believe, but here we have the first, the arch image, you know, where it all started. The arch image we do have, it still exists, and it's painted not by man's hand, it's painted by God, by the Lord himself. It's by the Father himself. During the second, of the very second of the resurrection.
It really is powerful when you go there. I am concerned about the security, though. Maybe that's just the reporter in me, because it's so easy to access when you go into the church. Are they going to be doing anything differently with the Jubilee year with security, do you think?
But what I said, St. Michael is protecting it. St. Michael himself, the archer is protecting it himself. You know, the Basilica was St. Michael's Basilica. He's protecting it for 2,000 years now. And he will succeed further on.
Yeah. Well, Paul, I had so many questions about the veil. I didn't have a chance to talk to you about the beautiful icon of Mary, and that's a new book that you just wrote about that, and we'll have to have you back on, because you also were so gracious and took me and Deacon Dom and also one of our groups to that church just outside of Rome to see this beautiful image of Our Lady, which is, what you're saying, is one of the earliest icons of Mary, right?
It's the earliest. This icon is the answer to the Montebello veil. That's what I'm saying. It's been painted by some Luke. The Union Apostles' Council in the year 48.
That's something else that people have to see.
Yeah.
Paul, thank you. Great to speak with you. Please tell your beautiful wife we said hello. And again, we will put some information on our Catholic Connection archives regarding not only the Veil of Montebello and Paul's article, but also all about his new book on the icon of Mary. We'll be right back.
How does one describe Christ's relationship to his church? The Catholic Catechism says Christ is one with his church. He is the head, we are the members. Head and members together make up the whole body of Christ. Head and members form, as it were, one and the same mystical person. St. Joan of Arc put it very simply to her judges. She said, "About Jesus Christ and the church, I simply know they're just one thing. We shouldn't complicate the matter." The Catechism also refers to the imagery of the bridegroom, the theme of Christ as the bridegroom of the church, as two in one relationship. Just as in marriage, two become one flesh, the church is portrayed as the spotless bride of the spotless Lamb. Christ has joined the church with himself in an everlasting covenant. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
Are you passionate about Jesus? Are you zealous for Jesus? Are you fervent for Jesus? Are we fervent for the gospel? Are we passionate about helping this world come to know him? Is that true? It's not true for most people in the church. Is Jesus my best friend? Is he your best friend? I'm looking around the church. There's a set of guys in here who have great man caves. As I was praying this morning, I felt like the Lord said, "Hey, when are you going to come to my man cave?" Like, you guys think a flat screen TV is really cool. Well, you should see what I got to offer. Because I and I alone, he says, can really give you what it is you're longing for. Whoever it is we're rooting for right now, they're going to lose eventually. Or whatever it is that's occupying our time, one day we're going to realize it really wasn't that important. Why aren't we hanging out with the one who alone can show us what life is really all about? When was the last time you hung out in the Lord's man cave?
Lots of exciting news from Rome today. Joan Lewis and I going back and forth in our emails, as we always do. And I was just telling Joni that with the news of Blessed Carlo Acutis and, of course, Blessed Pier Giorgio Vasari being canonized in the Jubilee year that was announced today after the audience, I just was at Carlo's tomb the other day. What's today? Wednesday. I was there, Joni, on Monday, because we're taping a series for my new book, which you endorsed. Thank you very much. A new Edmonton Learn series, and we were in Assisi, and we were outside St. Mary Major, and so, of course, I ducked into the church and made sure I said a little prayer, and here we have 2 days later, the big announcement from Rome. Good morning.
Well, good morning. Absolutely. It's just
An amazing, wonderful day. So much happiness around the world. People waiting for both of these young men who are currently blessed to be canonized. And I have followed the Pier Giorgio Frassati story for many years. And by the way, I have not, like you, been to the tomb of Carlo Acutis. That is obviously on my travel agenda in the near future. But I first became aware of Pier Giorgio Frassati. Well, actually, at some of the recent World Youth Days around the world, when the Vatican would name the various patron saints of an event, for quite a number of years now, Pier Giorgio Frassati has been one of the patrons of World Youth Day. And actually, two members of his family, this is the strangest thing, an aunt and an uncle who are currently in Rome. I believe they're both in their 80s now. But Wanda Gavronska and her brother, especially her brother, he's been involved in Italian politics for years. And Wanda and I have been in touch over the years. I've been invited to events for Pier Giorgio, especially on his July 4th birthday. There's usually some kind of a prayer service in Rome. And then one time we met at a very special event at the tomb of Pier Giorgio Frassati in Turin. And this was actually during one of the expositions that you and I attended of the of the Shroud of Turin. So I've been aware of this young man whose family, by the way, a very, very wealthy family and one of the founders of one of La Stampa, a very respected newspaper in Italy. And Pier Giorgio grew up with so many privileges. And but he began to give allowance, and any money that he did earn or was given, he began to use it for the poor, to help people who had no clothing, to help people who had no food, and to help sick people who might not have been able to get into a hospital. In fact, he eventually died of an illness at the age of 24. That was contracted by the, but his family in the beginning, it kind of, not that they absolutely ostracized him, but they were kind of encouraging him to, you know, stay within the family line of running a wonderful business, et cetera, et cetera. But that was not his life. He was a very good-looking young man, very athletic, had a ton of friends, and he made you think. I mean, we can think of Carlo Acutis, who died at the age of 16, Frassati at the age of 24. And by the way, he will, Pier Giorgio will become a saint almost exactly to the day 100 years after his death. So that, as we know, is going to be the week of July 28th to August 3rd, the Jubilee of Youth. And the Sunday that falls in that week will, of course, see the canonization. But you think of Carlo Acutis, two young people who had different charisms, but both were enormously popular, loved by their peers, and not shunned by their peers, even though they were kind of, you know, swimming upstream, as you might say, by, you know, Carlo with his love for the Eucharist and Eucharistic miracles, and being a young man who was so adept with the internet and computers, and of course they weren't even around when Frassati was. So they're just two wonderful personal stories, and I guess what I love about both of them, Teresa, how could we not, is the fact that these are young people. These are not two people who, John Paul always used to ask the Dicastery for Saints, please look for lay people. He said, people today think that to become a saint, you have to either be a martyr or found a religious order. And he said that kind of tongue-in-cheek, but also very seriously. Because Pope, you know, John Paul knew, and so does Pope Francis, so did Benedict, that there's many a layperson out there who should absolutely be made blessed and or canonized. You just lead this good, wonderful life, a virtuous life, a life of heroic virtues, a life in which you follow the will of God, not your own. And so it's just so wonderful to be able to hold up these two young men, you know, as models for the young people today. And so there were just so many reasons to rejoice with everybody else who was at the audience today and heard the Pope announce the canonizations for the Jubilee year. So,
I wonder if there's going to be even more additional. Well, they already talk about a lot of young people coming to Rome for the Jubilee year, but you have to imagine that there's going to be a ton of I think, increased interest in the fact that they could come for the actual canonization of these two amazing young men. And I love what you said, because they were so similar. Now, Pier Giorgio Vasari was a little bit older than Carlo, but not that much. I mean, Carlo was, what, 15? No. And Pier was in his early, what, was 21, 22?
And 24, so only 8 years really separated them. I mean, a century, but only 8 years in their own lives. And just such absolutely wonderful stories. And when I read today of cases that are coming out of different dioceses, especially for lay people, young gals, young guys, I just get so encouraged. And I know from first-hand experience, as do all of our listeners, because we've talked about it before, that, you know, the cause of canonization that I've been working on is for a layperson. Granted, Joseph Dutton was 88 when he died. But, again, you have to look at them. It was their charisms, their self-abnegation. I mean, probably more for Joseph Dutton, but still, I'm just aware of what goes into a cause. And, you know, Teresa, I don't know what they are at this point, but there has to be a miracle for a person to be, once they're a venerable and the whole, you know, their diocese and so forth knows, the world knows they can pray for these people for a miracle. When a miracle occurs for becoming a blessed, it's all, you know, carefully run through by the Vatican and ascertained. But what a lot of people don't know is that the miracle to become a saint, to be canonized, must occur after the person has become a blessed. So you can't be Carlo Acutis or Pier Giorgio Frassati and just accumulate a whole bunch of miracles. You have one for you know, beatification, and another one for, and I'm not sure, perhaps it's my fault for not knowing, but I'm not sure of the miracles that are leading each of these two young men to be canonized in the Jubilee year. So, Jubilee, what a big word for next year. Mm-hmm. We're going to have many moments of wanting to celebrate, to be jubilant people. So
I'm just so excited, because this is something, especially because I've long admired, and I'm learning more and more about Carlo Acutis, who was amazing, especially because he was such a media saint in terms of being considered God's influencer. But I really, really enjoy reading about Pier Giorgio Vasari because of his sense of humor and the quotes that he has about the Eucharist, and how if you're just living day to day, I'm paraphrasing, but I have this great quote that I have in my office back in the States about how you have to really embrace life. And he was so joyful, and he had such a tumultuous home life. I mean, he was in the midst of a family where the parents had marriage problems and they weren't faithful like he was. And so they didn't even know when he died how many friends and how many people were aware of what he was doing, because the funeral was so huge.
Absolutely. I forgot that aspect, but it certainly is one of the most outstanding. And just, you know what, Teresa, you read these stories and a smile just has to come to your face. Mm-hmm. And yes, there were hardships and difficult moments and so forth, but still, just the perseverance. And I think both of these young men knew that they were on earth to become a saint. We all are here for that very same reason. That's supposed to be our actual goal in life. And so when our ashes, you know, dust thou art and to dust thou shalt return, and then hopefully that dust will be sainthood and joining the communion of saints in heaven. That's our entire goal while we're on earth.
Yeah.
We
absolutely
have to live those heroic virtues.
Now, do you know, seemed to be, in the way the media are covering it so far, that this was a surprise, not a planned announcement? Because we knew it was coming. We knew we had heard before, and you had talked about this many times on this show and in your blog, that they were expected to be canonized in the Jubilee year. But was the announcement today on the docket, or is it something the Pope just said and made?
Well, I mean, it obviously was a very well-kept secret, because the thing is, those of us accredited, you know, to the Holy See press office in the morning, 9:30, 10, around that time, more or less, we receive the news of the day. The Pope will receive so-and-so. And there's usually an embargo on everything. You can't talk about a papal speech until he's given it. But we've noticed that certainly on a Wednesday general audience and then for a Sunday Angelus, if there's going to be some announcement, let's say Angelus, you know, new cardinals, or an announcement like today, that is never included in the information that we journalists get from the press office in the morning. So the thing is, a number of years ago, one media person broke the embargo, and ever since that happened, and it was an embargo on an Angelus, ever since that happened, the rest of us, for all these years, have been deprived from knowing in advance that the Pope will announce new cardinals or announce canonization. So it's just a wonderful sign today that, you know, no leak came out about this announcement. But then there also may have been only the Pope and one or two other people who knew it. You know, hey, by the way, here's what I'm going to say. So I guess that there's a good way to look at it, and that's, hey, no leaks from this papacy. Anyway, here we are. And then
It's such good news, though. It's something to really smile about. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Well, and I mean, there were so many announcements made today, and the fact that February 3rd, the Pope announced that there will be a world meeting on children's rights to take place at the Vatican. In fact, today is the actual United Nations Day for the rights of children. But the Pope said that he issued what's called a curagraph, and this established the Pontifical Committee for the World Day of Children, which will be next February 3rd, Jubilee year. And he appointed Father Enzo Fortunato, a Franciscan conventual, as the first president. So a beautiful letter. I will, you know, spend time reading that, but I think it's so important that we have that day to look forward to. And one thing about today, you know, if we're short on time, but I do want to mention not only what's going to happen in the future, this World Day for Children and Children's Rights, but today, this very day, is known as Red Wednesday. This was started by the Church in Need, Aid to the Church in Need Foundation. It's a papal foundation. This was set up in 2016 for the first time. And this is where hundreds of cathedrals, churches, monuments, and public buildings around the world will all be lit up in red on today, November 20th, as part of this Red Wednesday campaign. So there's going to be more than 300 events, as well as lighting up monuments and churches in about 20 countries. There's going to be masses, talks, live streams, concerts, et cetera, et cetera. But among those participating, of course, we have the UK, the US, Canada, Australia, Spain, France, Germany, Italy. We have the Colosseum to be lit up in red today. So an important day, obviously red. We know it's associated with cardinals, you know, that they are supposed to be ready to shed blood, to have the role of advisor to the Pope and to wear red. And red also signifying the blood that has been shed for many, many reasons. And so it's a day to be, you know, go online, folks, and do a Google search for Red Wednesday and see what might be lit up in your area or someplace near you.
Amen.
Wherever you live.
Yeah, beautiful idea. Yeah, great idea, Joan. Thank you. Great discussion. Very good news and a day to honor persecuted Christians and remember them as well. We'll be right back on a Wednesday morning. Let you know what's coming up on a Thursday. Stay tuned.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
Do you have a teenager at home who's full of potential? Too often the world is telling you to be content with mediocrity instead of raising respectful and responsible young adults with strong character. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. If you need some help, not only to navigate those teen years, but to really enjoy them, check out my book, Standing Strong, Good Discipline Makes Great Teens, as well as my other books, on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
Catholic Connection is sponsored by House of Joppa. House of Joppa's mission is to share the beauty of our one holy Catholic and apostolic faith in our homes through Catholic home decor, art, candles, statues, rosaries, and Catholic jewelry. They're gifts designed to help you live out your Catholic faith. For more information, go to houseofjoppa.com. That's houseofjoppa, J-O-P-P-A.com.
More of Catholic Connection coming up on EWTN and Ave Maria Radio.
Thanks so much for listening to EWTN and Catholic Connection, co-produced by this network as well as Ave Maria Radio out of southeastern Michigan. Tomorrow, Father Mitch Pacwa joins us with our cultural connections, and maybe we'll ask him a little bit more about the details going into a canonization. What does it mean, and what can we hope for in the Jubilee year next year? We'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a great Wednesday. God bless.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruczek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.